So I had this meal last night.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, cooked myself. Because Claire's vegetarian, you see. So sometimes we eat very different things.
Okay.
Like meat and vegetables.
For example.
Those two differences.
Yeah.
You know.
I got the idea.
Yeah. Okay. Thing is, I'm getting forgetful, right?
Right.
And I was cooking sausages and chips, basically.
Okay. Can't go wrong.
Bit of a fry up.
Yeah.
You know, but,
nice.
But, you know.
Why not?
So I put oven chips, which I've talked about before.
Yeah.
You put them in the oven. And then I was doing the fry up, which I'm going to talk about better later. But, you know, I'm doing the fry up. And I thought, oh, do you know what? A bit of fried bread with that would be good.
Yeah.
I'd completely forgotten, though, that I was cooking chips. So I ended up with...
Carb overload.
Sausages... You know, beans, all that stuff, and chips and fried bread. I think it was the least healthy meal I've ever eaten in my life.
Well, congratulations. When will you be releasing your diet book? The Nick plan.
But it was still very enjoyable. So, you know, it was a genuine error. So, you know, I had to eat.
Yeah, no, I like the idea of it. The Nick plan diet book, eat a lot and die young.
Welcome everybody to episode 272. Is that right?
Yeah, I think probably so.
Of the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast. My name is Nick Jamie Oliver Page, and there is Joe Davis.
Underwhelmed by the intro as ever.
It wasn't bad.
But it wasn't good either. So, you know, plenty to work on there.
Well, isn't that what we're generally aiming for with the podcast?
So, yeah.
To sort of hit that nice middle ground between good and bad.
I suppose so. Yes, exactly. Mm. Yeah. So,
church notices.
Well, just the same one. I did put up the link last week. I think possibly up to three people were interested. So, Staying Defiantly, a conversation hosted by Dave Steele and I in Brighton, Thursday the 18th, Friday the 19th of April. If you are in any form of leadership in the church and you've got questions about, you know, the dissonance you feel between your changing theology and the people you're leading, then, you know, that could be the conversation for you. So you got all the details on our website page. Facebook page,
indeed.
I meant to say. Yeah.
Mm. Well, it's on the website as well.
Oh, well, there you go, because that's the kind of guy you are.
I'm efficient these days.
You are, actually.
I'm focused. I'm lasered at the moment.
I have noticed how efficient you've been getting of recent, and I appreciate it.
No. We'll talk about it. Maybe talk about it next week. There's a thing. There's something going on. There's something going on.
Is going down. Anyway, how are you, dear boy?
Yeah, I'm all right. Actually, apart from still feeling bloated from last night's meal.
Well done.
Talking of which, okay, this week's food recommendation.
Yeah. Oh, here we go. Oh, now a regular feature. We should have a jingle. Yeah.
Absolutely, we should. Yeah, food of the week. It's sort of thankfulness. It's what I'm thankful for in terms of food.
Good.
You know, so we've had oven chips and cider and...
Yeah.
It's not looking healthy, is it, so far?
Today
is going to be black pudding.
Great. Full of fibre and goodness. Yeah, well done.
Black pudding. And for those of you from other parts of the world who don't know what black pudding is, it's a kind of delicacy of England made out of pig, substances of pig. Probably best not to go into any more detail.
The butcher sweeps the floor, turns it into a patty, galvanizes it with blood and fries it, I think you might.
Something like that.
Yeah.
But it's lovely. Do you like black pudding?
I do like black pudding, yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember the last time I had black pudding, but the last time I had it, I did like it. So, yeah.
But it struck me while I was eating my healthy extravaganza last night that, you know, I think, forget Shakespeare and Dickens and, I don't know, Westminster Abbey and the monarchy and parliamentary government and football and cricket and all the other great cultural achievements that the English have given to the world.
I can see where this is going. Yeah.
The greatest surely the greatest cultural achievement is the English cooked breakfast. Yeah. Is it not?
It must be.
I mean, you know, fried bread, fried eggs, mushrooms, tomatoes, black pudding, obs, sausage, bacon. I mean, it's... Yeah.
And are you a baked beans kind of guy or a non-baked beans kind of guy? Because that tears families apart, that question.
I am a baked beans kind of guy.
Yeah, me too.
But I have literally changed people's lives with English cooked breakfast, because we had a lovely friend of ours, Gloria. She came to live with us for a bit. She's Italian. And I took her out for an English cooked breakfast. And she's now the greatest fan.
Oh, is she?
Of the English
really?
Cooked breakfast.
Oh, well, that's impressive.
So, yeah.
Well, okay, thank you. So that's black
what
pudding.
Else?
Yeah.
What else? Yeah, black pudding. What else has been happening? Claire and I have been watching Traitor Series 1 because we never watched that.
Oh, didn't you?
So we're now into that.
Wow.
So that's good. Yeah,
I won't tell you what. I won't tell you what happens then.
No, don't. No spoilers. And okay. And I suppose appropriately, given the enormous amounts of fatty food that I've just been ingesting. Lent, of course, begins next week. It's Lent next week.
It does. Which means Ash pancakes. Wednesday. Healthy pancakes on Tuesday. With black pudding.
We're going to talk about it. Maybe right at the end. You know, okay. I think next week we'll probably do something on Lent. But, you know, it's just suddenly occurred to me this year.
Yes.
Easter's very early this year, and so it's going fast.
It always sneaks up on you, Lent, somehow. And always disappointingly, my birthday is in Lent, so that's always upsetting for me. If we're giving up stuff, yeah.
So that's me. Really.
Great. Well,
and your good self?
Yeah, no, good. Well, I mean, importantly, my wife is back from her sort of writing retreat. People make a lot of fuss over writing a book, don't they? I mean, I'm just saying.
Here we go.
Really? I mean, how difficult can it be, for goodness sake? Sit down, write a few words, publish a book, get on with it. Yeah. No, it is truly wonderful to have her back. That's great. I'll say no more. Oh, now, I'm fine, by the way, but this is what I did want to say to you. I think we can now proudly claim to be responsible for the Dealey effect. Because
really?
yeah well, Mike wrote in on Facebook, he actually took the picture of going into his local supermarket to buy, obviously, a chicken korma from the Charlie Bigham's range, which you may remember we publicized.
I recommended it last week.
Well, you know, there's empty shelves, and I assume that could be duplicated all over the country.
So
we sorry.
Should explain the Dealey effect, should we not, for again for our overseas listeners. Dealey Smith,
beloved cook. Yeah.
Yeah. She's like the sort of mother cook of the nation. Her and Mary Berry, anyway,
yes,
together.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah.
Everybody's got a copy of Delia's sort of cookery book, you know, the big black one.
Yeah.
And so she used to do a programme, and whatever she recommended
would sell out immediately.
Fresh cranberries, I think it was first. Something like that.
So
great, we're up there with her.
So now, mid-faith crisis and Delia. Yeah, yeah.
We'll be owning a football club before long.
Come on! Let's be having it!
I've already given my culinary tips episode. I've given a very healthy, fresh recipe.
You have. Thank you.
So...
for that.
We're there, really.
Yeah.
So, shall we move on?
Okay. So, feedback. And now, before we get going, can I just say, because we don't read out all the emails, and I feel a bit bad about that sometimes, because we just do get some breathtakingly wonderful emails that never make it to the show. So, just want to give a shout out to anyone who's written in sharing their stories, and sometimes they are quite heartbreaking, but saying they feel like they found a home and a community here on the Mid-Faith Crisis podcast. So listen, thank you to all of you. We feel the same, actually, about this community. And whatever church is, maybe this is part of your churching as a verb experience for this season. And we love having you along. So thank you.
Yes. Yes, it is a community. Although we're hoping one day it will be a cult. Really,
yeah, exactly.
You get... Your leaders get better cars in a cult, I believe.
They do get cars and as much black pudding as they want.
A bunch. and that's heaven for you. Anyway, so look, this week we thought we're going to carry on the discussion about church and reflect more on that because we had so much feedback, so many good messages in. And so once again, we're going to rattle through probably not quite as many as last week, which was sort of war and peace dimensions last week in terms of the amount of text. But why don't you kick off with this one from Claire?
Then? Yeah, sure. Well, Claire describes herself as a long-time listener and first-time emailer. So thank you, Claire.
Hello, Claire.
She said she had illness in the family, which she said made her want to throw God and church in the bin. But then she went on to say this. So instead of Sunday morning church, we go to Wild Church. She says we meet at 3 p.m. once a month on a Sunday in the church graveyard with the kids, as well as other families, couples, singles, grandparents, etc., from all different churches and non-churches. And we have a 10-minute reflection at the start based on God in nature, then follow with a related activity. One week, this was a tree survey, but has also been veg seed planting, making bird feeders, raking leaves, setting off fireworks. I'm not sure how that relates to nature, but anyway, it does. She says, we then go to the fire pit, which the grandpas have made, cook food and chat. It happens whatever the weather all through the year, and it's a complete tonic for us and the kids. They end up playing hide and seek with the other kids while we drink hot chocolate round the fire and chew the fat. We also have a Wild Church small group twice a month for adults where we discuss more in-depth topics. It's fairly new, so still finding our feet, but we have read Warren McLaren's Do I Stay Christian and now looking at Jesus and why he matters. Back to basics. We alternate houses to help with childcare. There's about 12 of us at the moment. There's also a Wild Church walk once a month where we go on a ramble with kids, dogs and any waif or stray. It works for us because it's completely different to Sunday morning church and involves the kids, other families and nature. I'm also finding the neutral space of nature is helping to rebuild my relationship with God, which was in tatters. Wild Church has been the safe community that we can all belong and feel space to breathe and be authentic. And who doesn't like a campfire? And that's from Claire.
Thank you very much. That sounds really interesting.
It is. It's like last week's one from Phil about the walking church. I mean, again, it's just a creative and different idea. Wouldn't suit everyone, but I can imagine a lot of people that would suit ideally.
And I do think we should reclaim churchyards as places of liveliness as well as solemnity. There's an awful lot of po-faced rubbish talked about churches and graveyards.
Well, they're often nature sanctuaries, aren't they, for a start? I mean,
they're incredibly green places.
Yeah.
And a lot of churches are doing that. I went to a little church in Aller in Somerset where they keep two sheep in the churchyard. typically in the past, that's what you would have done. The vicar or an incumbent would have kept some of their sheep in there. You know, so there's kind of... I think there's a whole history of life stuff happening in churchyards as well. They were the major places where people gathered. But anyway, love that. Thank you very much, Claire. So Janet wrote in also talking about sort of going out walking. And she wrote in extolling the virtues of her dog walking and how she's found community there.
Yeah.
Well, I think Rich just put up a picture of those green church cups.
Yeah, the ones with the rings. Yeah, exactly.
The ones with the three rings. Where do they come from?
I don't know. But every church seems to have them. And also, I should say that Andrea wrote in a very brief one just saying there should always be cake.
Absolutely.
That was never in my church planting module. But now I think about it, what an absence that was, Andrea.
I'll tell you what, each week at a little church I go to over the road, we have cake. And last week, I'd do work on the house and I thought, well, I'm going to get away early from church. And then I saw who was on cake and I thought, no, I'll stick around a bit.
There you go.
That's fantastic. Anyway, talking of cake and coffee and all that kind of stuff, this is one that you sent me from Facebook. Melanie said this. Yeah. She said, this is her ideal church, one where doubt is embraced and not frowned on, where the LGBTQ plus community is not looked down on. For example, oh yes, we love them, of course, but where real modern life is connected to the Bible in an honest way, actually allowing people to navigate their lives of faith together rather than separating the two. And here's the crucial bit, one that serves good coffee and crisp biscuits rather than soft, not quite fresh ones.
Amen.
Warm, comfy seats and where the collection plate isn't thrust under your nose in the middle of a worship song without warning. Mm. One that is honest about the fact that, for whatever divine reason, God does not answer every prayer. And one that acknowledges that faith in Jesus does not solve every single problem, and that even Christians can suffer from mental illness, and a church that embraces silence. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's good. Yeah. Yeah.
I haven't had a collection plate thrust at me for a long time.
No, it's all done by direct debits nowadays, isn't it? But I guess some churches must still pass around the old plate, do you think?
Well, you experienced it in Mexico, didn't you?
Oh, yes, kind of yes, very much so, yeah.
Bag waved at you.
We're on a very long stick. How could I forget? Anyway, Sian wrote in, however, and she is worried about the catering aspect. She says, I love the ideas that people gave for church, but I'm a terrible cook and get stressed whenever I'm asked to prepare food. I was recently asked to prepare rice for a meal and managed to burn it. I would ask that church remembers to think of people's gifts and that there is a lot of community to be found in washing up. If you do read this email, please could you thank the American pastor who initially introduced me to your podcast and was the recipient of said burnt rice on his last trip to the UK. And then she puts in a plug for Charlie Bigham's Thai green curry, which is also excellent.
We should get sponsorship.
Do you know what? I think we should, really.
Should we write? We could convert him. Perhaps he is converted.
Perhaps he is.
Who knows? Anyway, Mark. Oh, yeah, my friend Mark, he wrote in.
Yeah.
He says, when I met Nick, my family and some friends were running a tiny church in our village. We went to Spring Harvest in France annually to help us feel that there were other Christians and get some alternative teaching combined with a holiday. And they tended to take very good wine with them, can I add? Other than that, we largely avoided large gatherings. We got a few people we trusted, including Nick, to come minister to us in the village to give a different voice.
Poor fools.
Yeah, I know, well, you can't have everything. We kept our orthodoxy thin, so not to exclude people, and our orthopraxy high to include people. The plan was to be large enough to matter and small enough to care. The meaning behind this was we could impact the community, yet not be so large we couldn't care for each other and know everyone deeply. It's a shame we never achieved what we saw as our aim, but we had a lot of fun and laughs trying.
Wow, that's
well, I went a few times to their gathering and it was wonderful. It had a real... I felt it had that feel, you know, but, you know.
But again, it's sort of speaking to size as well. You know, you just can't be known in a church that's hundreds of people, can you? There comes a point where a service is too big for that, you know, a sort of traditional service.
No, yeah. A very wise friend of mine who used to be a principal of a very well-known Bible college. He used to argue that you couldn't have a church on sort of New Testament lines that was more than about 150 people, because you just wouldn't know everybody. Mm. And, you know, even that's probably pushing it, I would have thought. Yeah. But anyway, yeah. And also the other thing I think for Mark is, yeah, you tried and it worked for a while, and kind of like it's good to try things. You know, we get worried about whether or not things last and whether they have to sort of be seen as working or what our aims are. But, you know, maybe take the expectations off and just do things and don't worry about
I completely agree with that. And that's a point picked up by Kathy, who sent in a great email sharing some experiences and completely affirming that we shouldn't run things forever just because it was a great idea once. And she said, I think the only thing I could say is that whatever we come up with in our perfect church design, wouldn't it be great if we could remember, even if we start something that ticks all the boxes for now, let's not assume that God won't want to do something completely different with us next year. That's good, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
That is just a really great point. And there's no shame in trying stuff. And maybe we'll pick this up a bit later, but I do feel quite strongly, going back to one of my favourite quotes from old Fluffy, that, you know, the best criticism of the bad is the practice of the better. It's very easy to sit back and criticise what's wrong with church and you know, what would be better and what would be better for you. And to which sometimes I think, well, be the answer to your own prayer there, you know, just try it, do something, no harm.
And I think maintaining things is hard,
yeah,
you know, and I'll pick up on this later, because I think maintenance becomes seen as an end in itself,
yeah,
but I think you know, I like the idea of seasons. You know, you do things for a while, you do things for a season, and then you can try something else, really.
Yeah, maybe you should always start something with an end date, because you can always choose to review and extend. But maybe you should never start something, because the implicit thing can sometimes be, and this is going to run for the rest of your lives, exactly like this. Mm. Yeah,
I think it's a tricky one, because, you know, I remember actually talking with our mutual friend Steve Chalk when we were in Oasis together about whether or not we should put a termination date in for Oasis, because so many ministries just carried on. But in the end, we thought, yeah, we can't really do that, because you don't know what God's going to be doing. But no. But I like that idea. Another friend of mine always used to have a review every year of the church, where every organisation, everything that was going on in the church, he was a church leader, had to come to him and go, this is what we're doing, this is why we're doing it, and this is how it's going, basically.
Yeah,
so that things just didn't keep going on, you know. Anyway.
It feels quite healthy, doesn't it? Yeah, yeah.
It does, it does. Yeah. So look, we had loads of emails in about sort of forms of church, what church kind of looks like. But we also had some people writing in, picking up on what church actually does.
Yeah,
what actions it performs, and its mission, if you want to use that that word, which I do because I just did.
Yes,
so clearly, I felt anyway. I'd like to pick up on a few of those and maybe think about the activities of a church this episode, really.
So Tim wrote a very thoughtful email in. He actually condensed our Gospels down. Remember those when we talked about those? And he picked up on this idea that Christian living is about doing the next good thing, and so we need to help with that. And so a community of encouragement, when we can share our stories and receive help, is the purpose of the church, to help us live out the gospel.
Rachel wrote in with her kind of ideal church, a parish church that is run as a hub for the parish, a place where the significant moments of people's lives can be celebrated, where there's space for quiet contemplation and spiritual support is available for those in need of it. There's a social space, there's practical support, food banks, toddler groups, social groups, etc. All of them run because they're good things in and of themselves and not just a means of converting people. Maybe church could be just one of the activities which uses the space rather than in charge of it. Well, there's an interesting thought.
Yeah, exactly.
Spirituality and practicality all in one place. Yeah. I love that. I like that a lot.
Yeah, it's a good phrase. I like that very much indeed. And again, that idea of running things just because they're good is very sort of kingdom theology, isn't it? Like, we're not doing this with agendas of so we can get you to church. We're doing this because we think it's really good and it's doing a good thing. Helen wrote in. She said, I think it'd be great to be part of a church that, one, believes the Lord is our shepherd, as per Psalm 23. That is a place of genuine nurture for all. Two, believes that the good shepherd goes to seek and save the lost, she says. We come together to focus on carrying on the mission of Jesus to the poor, the marginalised, etc. This would not be an optional extra, but the sole reason the church exists. And then she said, totally open in terms of music, singing, teaching, etc. So long as this is focused on the two things above, and this is not just a religious club existing in a bubble, all about me and my individual spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
Very good. And then she goes on to say that she loves Teze. We love it, dear, you know.
Oh, Lord, hear my prayer.
Anyway, very simple and authentic without focus on individual leaders. But she says, I do think that theologically trained leadership and institutional accountability are also important to stop any new initiatives descending into a free-for-all or becoming cult-like.
Oh, well, yeah, there you go. That ruins my cult idea from earlier. Anyway.
It does, yeah. There is a lot there, isn't there?
I'm interested in that one, and I'm interested in some of the ideas in it, and I suppose the phraseology of it as well. I thought it would be good for us to sort of touch on this in sort of mid-faith crisis. What's the purpose of the church, and what does it mean to sort of, you know, seek and save the lost, in Helen's words? Because I think, you know, it's very difficult for us to sort of keep using this old terminology, as it were, and yet I wouldn't want to jettison it, because I think it's very rich. So kind of how do we navigate that? So, you know, you've been thinking a lot about church recently, given that you've stopped your former expression of it.
Yes, indeed.
and you're now going for what I may call a fresh expression.
Thank you.
Thank you. Just coined that phrase. I haven't been used before. So what do you think? What's the purpose of church? What do you think?
Well, I mean, it's an interesting thought, isn't it? I mean, this idea that the purpose of the church is to carry on the mission of Jesus to the poor and the marginalised, etc. I would agree with that. But does that mean lots of projects? I don't think I agree with that, because then you've got to have a big church. I mean, I do think the evangelical church historically has been quite good at organising themselves to do social action in the world. Mm. But the trouble is, we now think that's the purpose of the church. And I suppose I think, well, if you're five people or two people or three people, you probably can't run a big project, but you can encourage each other to live in the Jesus way, which is to serve the marginalised and the poor. But it might not be like look like a grand project or something like that. So I guess for me, it's going back to that previous email about what's the purpose of the church. Well, it's to encourage the followers of Jesus to live the way of Jesus. I think that's where I come back to.
That's a really nice way of putting it, I think. What about that point about theologically trained leadership and institutional accountability? Because we haven't really talked about, you know, all the models that we've had really have been very light on leadership. And I suspect that's partly to do with where a lot of our listeners are coming from. Many of our listeners indeed have been rather burned by leadership and, you know, its abuses. And yet, you know, you feel like there's got to have something there. What are the parameters of it? You yourself are remaining, obviously, in leadership as an ordained Baptist minister.
I'm not leading, you know, anything.
We've established this.
Couldn't lead a prayer meeting in a church, mate.
but you have led churches, yes, unlike myself. And so I'm interested in the sort of parameters you see in these different forms of churches. How does that work its way out?
It's changed, I think. So point number one, when Jesus said, I will build my church, you know, what did Jesus mean? Did he mean, I want a lot of statues and gargoyles, please? I need spires. I need gold ornaments. I definitely need candlesticks. You know,
obviously.
Well, we're assuming he did mean, obviously, all of those things. Do we want a priesthood back? Yes, very much so. A controlling priesthood in overall charge of build, and then to maintain those wonderful things, but also to keep the people in check. So, yeah, Jesus definitely meant that when he said, I'll build my church. And I think the other thing we can assume that he meant when he said where two or three are gathered in my names is that gatherings might sometimes be quite small as well as large. Mm. Is that fair play?
Well, yeah, but he didn't say you're not going to have leaders at all.
No,
he just said you're not going to have the same type of leaders as you had before. And the church has rather cleverly sidestepped that and done, you know, so I always think there's that phrase, you know, that verse, call no man father.
Yeah.
And the church has just spent two millennia saying, you must call me father.
It's very odd, isn't it?
How did they do that?
It is strange. No, of course you've got to have leadership, but I don't think that's particularly a spiritual requirement. Not that I want to step out spiritual from non-spiritual, but you know, it's just a function, isn't it? Leadership. If you want to care for all the orphans and widows in an area, and you know they need feeding, and then you say, well, you've got to organise yourselves, and that's what you see being played out in the New Testament a bit, doesn't it? Well, you know, put them in charge, and you look after the Bible studies, and you look after this, and you look after. I don't see it as a big hierarchy or a big well. And these people, well, you need to go to theological training college to make sure your theology is all worked out. I mean, I don't know what I think about that. I think, you know, some of the guys I know are wonderful, and they've done that, and they're just doing fantastic work, so I don't mean to criticize that. But other people like yourself, who hasn't been an ordained church leader, would probably do an excellent job in actual fact. So I don't know is the answer.
Certainly look good in robes. You know, I think it's a tricky one, isn't it? I think part of the issue is that we've put the emphasis a lot on training and doctrine, and not perhaps emphasis in terms of things like skills like team building, you know, accountability, networks, all this kind of stuff, ordinary stuff, so that you end up with a lot of people who know a lot of clever stuff but don't actually know how to manage volunteers, which is fundamentally what church is about, really. And also, we've maybe forgotten that servant aspect. You know, the early, one of the key roles in the early church was deacon. Diakonos means servant. They were this, they were there to serve.
And
you know,
Jesus modelled servant leadership for us.
He did,
so, you know, I think there's the clue. But, you know, many large churches now are run like businesses. You know, one of my favourite lines when I exited church was, "The needs of the organisation have outgrown your gifts," which is was undoubtedly true, but it still hurt because he thought, "Oh golly, is that what church is? It's an organisation." And I sort of kicked against it quite a lot and felt all hurt and upset for a while until I thought, "But actually, that is completely true. That statement is completely true."
I'm actually just making a note of that for future reference.
Yeah. Don't use it on me again.
That point when I have to say the needs of the podcast have outgrown your
Exactly.
Although, to be honest, I think the needs of the podcast outgrew our gifts about episode 4. Really.
Yeah, at least. Yeah. You're being generous. Yeah.
I think it is a tricky one. I met a church leader once, really interesting, wise guy, and he said to me, "My job," he says, "is not necessarily to tell people what to think. It's to make sure that nobody else does." You know, and I thought that was kind of interesting way of looking at it in terms of keeping the dialogue going within his church and not. But I mean, there's got to be boundaries, and there's got to be a certain level of, you know, agreement on values and, if you want to call doctrine, to some extent. But. You know, it can so often be abused, can't it? Really?
It does, and power does always seem to corrupt, doesn't it? Whether it's in the church or not in the church, whether it's in government or wherever. So, I mean, I think that, you know, that's why Jesus continues to remain inspiring, this servant leader who, you know, who was God after all, and who models something and a way of using power very, very differently, a way of holding power, of carrying, of exercising power. So isn't the role of the church to ultimately to help us be more Christ-like individuals? And many church leaders, I think, do that by their example. They are Christ-like people. But every now and then you do get, you know, what can I say, a bit of a bad egg. And, you know, there they are. They're leaders, they're in charge and everything, but they are not Christ-like. And that can be a bit of a problem for those poor churches that have a leader like that. But I'm mercifully, there's hopefully not too many of those around now.
Well, it's the problem is, you know, temptation to sin expands to fill the opportunities available for isn't it? And so if you've got more power, if you've got into that kind of model where you are used to being a shepherd in the old sense of it, you know, it's easily abused. But I want to pick up on what you just said about the role of church, the purpose of church, because I've been thinking about this, and I think there's these two aspects for me. You know, I have quite strong, you might say, traditional views on what things should happen to make something a church service, because I think there is a line that goes right back to the New Testament to shows that, and those sort of basic things like, you know, the Eucharist, some form of giving, some, you know, meal shared together, these kinds of things you can trace back, prayer, you know, those kinds of things. But in terms of the purpose of a church, I agree with you. I think the purpose of church is both inward and outward. It's to help people be more Christ-like, and through that, to use a phrase of our friend Trevor's, to demonstrate that the greatest invitation in life is the invitation to discipleship, to be a follower of Christ. That is the greatest opportunity that life affords you, because it's about fullness of life. How you do that, myriad different ways, but I don't think you can do it unless you're living it. That's the point.
Exactly. And I think this sort of comes back because, you know, I think we probably do need to summarize these models. And you've had models that are saying sort of sometimes very contradictory things, which tells me that people need very different things at different stages of their spiritual journey. And sometimes a church of, you know, 10,000 people can be a wonderful place. It can be inspiring and uplifting and all of those things. But sometimes that's the last thing you need. What you need is a small, safe space. And I think that's what we've been exploring as we've heard all these things. And, you know, we need food and a place you're known. And maybe we need to suspend singing for a while. And maybe we need to pick it up. And maybe we need to do it in an outrageous French accent. That's always good. But the point is, I think what I'm starting to see from these answers is there's no big model of church to discover. You know, someone's not going to come out and say, I have found the all-conquering model of church that is going to solve all these countries' problems. And every mid-faith crisis listener is going to love coming to this church because we've designed it. It just won't work. We need lots of different expressions of church. We need big churches. We need small churches. We need medium-sized churches. We need churches that do this, churches that do that, some that are focused around social action, some that are focused around other things. But I think perhaps we can draw out some common themes that any church would need to do. And I would say encouraging in the Jesus way, whether you use that language or not, you know, the way of love, whatever, you know, floats your boat. You might use more religious language, you might use less religious language. But that seems to me to be our purpose here, to love this world as Christ loved the world. So, in summary, I suppose I'm saying here, let's just have lots of different models of church. And, you know, if you feel, I think, really uncomfortable in your current expression of church, and you do feel you need to get out in nature more and you do need to walk more and everything, and maybe find others who would also like that. And if you can't find others, listen to a podcast like this one, perhaps. Not forever, but for a stage of your journey. Maybe listen to more than one episode. I mean, that's good going for this podcast, frankly.
I think I've come down feeling that church should above all be a place of healing. And that's how I tend to sort of view the old idea of saving souls these days. I like the phrase, the traditional phrase used in the Anglican Church, of the cure of souls. You know, that the responsibility of the vicar, the cure of souls. And the healing of souls, it seems to me, is salvation. You know, by saving souls, I don't mean ticking off people on the list to heaven. No. I mean healing. You know, Jesus used it in that sense, you know, when he brought healing to people, physical healing to people, even when he just had a meal with someone. There's a lovely line in Luke 19, you know, there's a Zacchaeus story where he says, salvation has come to this house today.
Yeah.
And just why? Because he had a meal with someone who didn't think that anybody wanted to have a meal with him.
Yeah.
You know, that's all that happened. So I think it's about restoration. It's about helping people towards a Christ-like life. And, you know, obviously, it's as so many of our emails have shown, it's about cooking food. So can I bring it right back to the beginning and suggest a fry-up is always good?
It is true, and it was interesting, isn't it? I just think so many churches get caught up. I mean, remember that in Worthing, I think there's 90 churches. It doesn't seem possible, and that statistics cannot be right now, even if it was when I arrived here 17 years ago, and I doubted it then. But, you know, I knew for a fact that there were all these really small churches, and they all felt they had to do youth work because they all need young people to come to church. And you just think, well, surely that's not a good idea. Wouldn't it be better if one church did it really well and then another church did a soup run really well and another church did, but all trying to duplicate, because I think that everyone has this notion of what a church should be and should do. Should do youth work. It should have a family service, and that means that it should be a Sunday school. And even if there's only two children, there has to be a Sunday school. And you know, people were running themselves ragged back then, I think. I suspect not so much now. I don't know for sure. But, you know, with this, their notions of everything that a church should do. And now I think, well, just do a couple of things well, maybe. You don't all need a worship band, for example. There's a finite number of musicians around. You don't have to use the, you know, people that only know three chords, because you're stuck with status quo songs then, however you look at it.
I mean, there is a lot of that. Since we moved here, we've been to lots of different sort of places, lots of different churches looking at things. And you do get the feeling that, for some of them at least, the most important thing is just maintaining that service.
Mm.
That's all that's happening, just making sure that people turn up on a Sunday. And I wrote a book many years ago. It's not a very good book, but it was the best I could do at the time, about the future of the church.
Yeah.
And I think the line that always stuck for me from that was the idea that you have to change the model according to the people that you've got there. And it's like, I use this line of, if you have 22 people turn up, you can play a game of football. Mm. But if you have two people turn up, you're better off playing tennis.
Yeah.
You know, you just have to adapt the game and do different things. That's fine. Do it for a while.
That's well
Try
put.
Something different.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have gone on more than long enough. Thank you so much to everybody who wrote in. It's been an absolute thrill to kind of hear from you over all this.
Yeah, it has. And also just some really interesting and great ideas have certainly helped me in my market research. So thank you all. I'll keep you posted with whatever happens, you know.
Yes, let's not lose sight of the main reason for this topic, which was just to help Joe develop his next sort of cash cow church, basically.
Yeah, because the last one was a failure financially. I'm not going to lie. Utter failure.
So we will pick up on another question in a few episodes' time, probably, in our stunningly named series, Some Slightly Interesting Questions, or whatever what we call the moderately interesting.
Moderately interesting, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. Marginally. But next week, let's think about Lent, I think, because we'll be into it by next week. So if you've got any opinions on Lent, if you're giving up anything on Lent, if you would rather give up Lent for chocolate than the other way around, you know, do get in touch with us. Let us know. What does it mean to you now? Does it mean anything at all? I don't know, really.
Does Lent still have any relevance for this world and for your spiritual journey? That would be a good one. Yeah, let us know. Yeah. Write into joe@midfaithcrisis.org. I'd love to hear from you. That'd be great. Thanks.
So it only remains for me to say thank you for listening. Thank you to everyone who supports the podcast financially. Indeed. That's fantastic.
It really is.
Thank you to everyone who recommends it. Thank you to everyone who contributes an email or a text message or whatever. I don't even know what they do these days. Do they send postcards to you? I don't think so.
Not so many.
Well, bless you for listening, everyone, and we'll be back with you next week.
We will indeed.